The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hi, this is Mike Edwards with another edition of the Armchair Traveler from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And for the next half hour, I'm going to be reading to you from the National Geographic Traveler and the Washington Post. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you, neither the Triangle Radio Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles we're going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. Well, if you were with us in our previous episode of Armchair Traveler, you're going to, or may recall, rather, that we visited Downtime. Yes, that's a section of the April-May 2019 issue of National Geographic Traveler. The subtitle, City Secrets and Weekend Getaways. As writer Brooke Sabin revealed in her introduction, these are destinations to chill out. Last time, we started with Tokyo as we went beyond sushi to sample some of the best foodie spots in the Japanese capital. Today on Armchair Traveler, we continue our downtime adventure, starting with Scotland, where writer Kathy Newman will help us do some estate planning, enabling us to sleep, dine, and play like royalty in posh Scottish manors. Shall we begin? If the perfect trip takes you as far out of your own life as possible, then the ultimate adventure can be had in and among the estates of Scotland. How best to channel the royal existence for a weekend or more? One option, you could buy a Scottish estate of your own, like the 12,000-acre Tillyprony Estate in Aberdeenshire, which was sold in 2016 and comes with an 11-bedroom stone manor, grouse moor, salmon river, gardens, and Scots pine-studded forest. But the price tag of $13.6 million might give you pause, not to mention the payroll for all those butlers, gamekeepers, gardeners, housekeepers, and cooks you'd need to run the place. Or you could go to an agent who specializes in sporting lets, that's British parlance for rentals, and book a country house or estate lodge for a week. In the Highland hamlet of Old Struan, find Kindrogat Lodge, and more on that at Ethel Estates, and that's athol-estates.co.uk, athol-estates.co.uk on the Athol Estates rents for the Victorian Stone Shooting Lodge, which sleeps 16, and they started around $3,000 a week, internet included, but exclusive of housekeeper, cook, provisions, and tips. And guests commonly dress for dinner. Tartans optional. Well, it's a great way to throw a house party, says Mark Marison of Marison Sporting Limited, based in Wiltshire. His website is marisonsporting.com. Marison is M-E-R-I-S-O-N, marisonsporting.com. He says you eat well, live well, and are in the company of good friends, and activities typically include fishing, shooting, and riding. There are also the Corroor Estates, a 57,000-acre property set on the edge of Rannoch Moor, and offered by George Goldsmith Limited of exclusive properties and sporting estates in Scotland. A couple of websites for more information here. Corroor Estates, you can find that at C-O-R-R-O-U-R, corroor.co.uk, and George Goldsmith is georgegoldsmith.com. The Contemporary Lodge features a dining hall that seats 40, seven en-suite bedrooms, and a rooftop hot tub. Rents start from... You ready? $62,000 a week, fully catered for up to 14 guests. Ruffles and flourishes are happily tailored to order. For example, Goldsmith can arrange for a bagpipe player or, for something more full-throated, a complete pipe band with 20 pipers and 5 drummers to do honors. A lovely experience, especially after you've had a whiskey or two, Goldsmith says. Adherents of more traditional style might prefer the 18th-century 12-bedroom knock house, and check that one out at benmoreestate.co.uk. Benmore is B-E-N and then M-O-R-E, benmoreestate.co.uk. It's on the 17,000-acre Benmore Estate on the Isle of Mull, listed by Robert Rattray of Perth-based Sporting Lets, and they have a website, sportinglets.co.uk, sportinglets.co.uk. Among its amenities, a 42-foot yacht that the owner is swapping out for a 50-foot boat in the coming season, tennis courts, and a kennel with room for 4 dogs. It is priced from around $15,000 to $26,000 a week. There is some crossover on listings, by the way. Goldsmith and Marison are also representative agents. One of the newest players in the luxury setting is Edinburgh-based River Travel. and it's owned by Ted Inskur, and you can check it out at reivertravel.com, R-E-I-V-E-R, reivertravel.com. In his previous job for a similar company, Inskur, more formerly known as Lord Edward Arthur Gerald Inskur, second son of the 10th Duke of Roxburgh. "My brother will be the next Duke. I'm a lowly lord," he demurs. He once arranged for a group of Texas businessmen to spend 3 nights at Floors, and that would be floorcastle.com if you want to check that one out, floorcastle.com, floorscastle.com. His family's castle, with 2 days of driven grouse shooting, helicopter hops to 3 premier golf courses, and a night in a 15th-century castle before helicoptering back to Edinburgh, cost for the week a tad over $250,000. Whims are accommodated. At that price, they should be. A young guest craving macaroni and cheese got it, served on a crested china. Before departing, guests receive a leather bag with treats like haggis-flavored chocolates and cashmere socks. A Scottish sojourn has been considered downright chic ever since Prince Albert bought Balmoral Castle in the Aberdeenshire Highlands for Queen Victoria in 1852. Current owner, Queen Elizabeth II, who carries on the family tradition and spends summers there, can sometimes be spotted motoring to Sunday services at Crathy Kirk, the nearby parish church. And if the lessee wishes to consummate the Highland romance by buying an estate, well, no problem. George Goldsmith and Robert Rattray can arrange that as well. Maybe that's a little overkill for downtime, huh? Well, let's go now to Geneva for some downtime there. And our writer is Kelly DiNardo. She's taken us on the town where locals show how to loose the Swiss center of finance. Chocolate, cheese, and watches. Geneva, capital of commerce, considered the sixth largest financial center in Western Europe, is often dismissed as a sleepy metropolis, but the Swiss city, home to a staggering number of international organizations that include the World Health Organization, World Economic Forum, Red Cross, and Doctors Without Borders, is shaking off its buttoned-up reputation. There is an energetic undercurrent of cocktail bars, creative ethnic fare, and unique museums mixed in with the classic Grand Dame hotels, luxe boutiques, and impressive churches. This, along with the backdrop of Lake Geneva and the Alps, makes it increasingly appealing to stick around after hours. For a mix of colorful and classic posh and slightly bohemian activities, we turn to a few Genevois. And the first one is Philippe Kramer. He is designer, Philippe Kramer Furniture and Home Accessories. And here are his recommendations. First, CERN, home to the world's most powerful particle accelerator, which is how scientists found the Higgs boson, the God particle. The place will make you want to find your own VHS, old VHS cassette, Back to the Future. And you can reserve tours, but they must be reserved early. Then you have the Beau Rivage, the most romantic hotel in Geneva. It is an old-world palace, recently updated, and has many tales. Sissi, the beloved Empress of Austria, was staying there when she was assassinated outside the hotel in 1898. It has a sublime atrium. Then we have Old Town. There are some fantastic shops in Old Town. Theodora's, a tiny perfume shop that sells scents hard to find elsewhere. Qixin Te Ni is a funny little place that sells all kinds of Chinese tea, and it really belongs in a Woody Allen movie. And then finally, we have Luigia. This pizzeria has a cosmopolitan yet low-key atmosphere. It caters to a mix of UN types, yuppies, graphic artists, Russian heiresses, and just regular Genevois. And it's a super central, so no need to drive after too much Vino Rosso. Well, our next person on the list is Adapola, CEO of Alchemy Forever, and recommending, first of all, Timothy Olton for a business lunch. "I love Timothy Olton," she says. "It has the best service, excellent food, and is somewhat surprising in its decor. I always want to buy a gift for my husband there. Their furnishings and accessories are curated and masculine." Then the Tiffany Hotel. "I always recommend the Tiffany Hotel to my friends. I can never decide what I love best, the Art Deco feel, the amazing breakfast buffet, or the central location." And then next is the Forever Institute. "All of my beauty needs here, I head to Forever Institute, and which my father runs. He is the best dermatologist in Switzerland, although I may be biased." And then she suggests the Mirror Bar. "When I need to think, write, or strategize, and I prefer to be outside the office, I head to the Hotel Metropole. The mirror bar is calm yet social. The coffee is as good as the champagne, and somehow the red color scheme helps my creativity. And finally, we have Seth Pietras, and Corporate Affairs Director of Guinevoix Group. And recommendation number one is La Verre à Monique. This speakeasy is one of the best bars in the city. There is comfy seating and typically a chill soundtrack playing in the background. The bartenders are always ready to indulge an adventurous streak. I prefer the Vesper, a classic cocktail, but if I'm feeling bold, I like the Corpse Reviver, featuring a dose of absinthe. Then we have Three Kids. Lunch in Geneva can be a drawn-out affair, so this new sandwich shop fills a gap for quick noontime meals. They make fresh New York-style bagels daily and offer lots of sandwich options from Ibe, which has parma ham, mozzarella, pesto, and sun-dried tomatoes, to the Plain Palenos, which includes chicken with tartar sauce, melted Gruyere, and onions. Next up, Alma. This Peruvian restaurant has great pisco tours. It can be busy. Sit at the bar where the service is better. Then we have ADC Genève. This is something different than the usual night out for drinks. The ADC Genève puts on contemporary dance performances. It's located in Lviv, so afterwards you can head to the Rue Henri Blainvillet, where there are a number of bars like Yvette de Marseille, La Atelier, and Botel Brothers. And then you can sup Genevieve. You can rent paddle boards and equipment and see the city, Mont Blanc and Jet d'Eau from the water. If you get a few friends along, you can set up an informal flotilla for a mid-lake picnic and while away a very pleasant afternoon. So lots of interesting recommendations for downtime in Geneva there. And by the way, there is what they call mountain time. The city can be quiet on the weekends when many Genevois are in the mountains. Here's where to join them. And there's Chamonix, about an hour outside of Geneva in the shadow of Mont Blanc is the French town of Chamonix. Because it is a town rather than a ski resort, access to the main lifts takes a bit of planning. Then we have Gstaad. This pricey jet-setter spot, 2.5 hours from Geneva, is surprisingly family-friendly and features a mix of terrain for a variety of levels. Next up is Verbier, a favorite resort town for the British. Verbier includes slopes at varied levels, snow parks, and off-piste powder, as well as a busy après-ski scene. And then we have Megève. The chic pedestrian village offers a surprisingly large ski area, fine food, and plenty of luxury boutiques. And in Porte du Soleil, one of the largest ski areas in the world, it includes resorts Avoriaz, Morzine, Avoriaz, and Le Gat, and has expansive terrain for all levels. And finally, Zermatt, Switzerland's most famous peak. The Matterhorn is a 3-hour drive from Geneva. The village is packed with high-end shops, bars, and restaurants, and the skiing has it all. Piste, moguls, glacier skiing, and freestyle. All of that right there in Geneva for some good downtime over there. Well, let's see now. Writer Patrick Thomas is going to take us to our final downtime destination. This is Silicon Valley, California. Here he finds America's smartest cocktails, or as the editors note, the country's high-tech hub now has a wealth of crafty tipples. Silicon Valley has incubated some of the world's most successful companies, but asks locals where to go for world-class drinks and responses, and that ranges from blank looks to directions to San Francisco, an hour's drive north. In an area with incomes nearly 2 times higher than national averages, one would expect more reason to celebrate, but the cocktail per capita index here is shockingly low. The region is loosely defined as a 30-mile strip of north-to-south run-on cities like San Mateo, Menlo Park, Palo Alto, Mountain View, Cupertino, Los Gatos, bordered by forested hills and Pacific Ocean on the west and San Francisco Bay to the east. When the Rosewood Sand Hill opened on Venture Capital Central Sand Hill Road in 2009, it was one of the peninsula's only sophisticated drinking establishments. Today, however, Silicon Valley's innovative spirits have finally spread, and here are some suggestions for you. Number one is the Bird Dog in Palo Alto, the horseshoe-shaped bar at Bird Dog, and they're online at birddogpa.com. Features modern brass lamps and hip-hop music inspired by chef Robbie Wilson's radically straightforward food menu. The duck entree's description simply reads duck, pumpkin, banana, cashew. The drinks use only a few ingredients in unexpected combinations. Try the honey badger. made from Arret tequila, strawberry sriracha honey using local Swantonberry Farms strawberries and Marshall Farms organic honey, lemon juice, and Northern California's Humboldt Brewing Nectar IPA. Then we have the Manresa. Los Gatos feels like a quiet vacation town, but it hides a culinary giant, Manresa, which boasts 3 Michelin stars, and you can check it out at ManresaRestaurant.com, M-A-N-R-E-S-A, ManresaRestaurant.com. And the chance of an open stool at its first-come, first-served 4C bar is worth the gamble. Bar manager Jason Strick infuses, ages, and adapts the restaurant's outstanding produce over months and sometimes years to create cocktails worthy of Chef David Kench's award-winning dishes. The bourbon-based Postmodern, for example, includes the walnut liqueur Nocino and Amontillado Sherry. Next is the Bywater. For more of a hoodie and flip-flops affair, head to the town's other Kinch property, the Bywater, and they're online at thebywater.com. New Orleans comfort food ranging from fried oyster po' boys to gumbo yaya perfectly frames the restaurant's frozen daiquiri. Not only will the plantation pineapple and the Denison white rums blended with house-made voodoo mix give you visions of Bourbon Street, it will also necessitate another Silicon Valley invention, a Lyft or Uber, to get you home. Then we have the Lexington House. Walk to the Lexington House, and you can check it out at the Lex.com. That's T-H-E-L-E-X-I-G, thelexic.com, for a master class on the basics. And this includes great local spirits simply presented, classics like the Whiskey Smash, share space with inventive originals, all created on the menu to the bartenders who developed them. A must-try from Flowers Come Honey, a delicate nasturtium tincture that highlights the dynamic herbal flavors of Botanavior gin from the local distillery, the St. John Spirits in Alameda, California. Then we have the Jack Rose Libation House. For a nightcap, pull into Jack Rose Libation House. JackRoseBar.com has more information. One of the region's only bars open after the witching hour. Named after one of Ernest Hemingway's famous drinks and located just half a mile from one of John Steinbeck's old houses, its eponymous drink mixes flavors featuring Laird's apple brandy that feel deliciously old-fashioned in this tech utopia. And then nearby, we have Cabernets and Company. These are hidden spots in Napa Valley to get the gang together. We have the Hall St. Helena, anchored by the King's Table, built to resemble a massive tree trunk. The founder's cellar at Hall's Winery in St. Helena seats 44 and is highlighted by an original Murano glass chandelier. HallWines.com will get you more information online. Then we have the Inglenook, nestled deep in the framed Nibum Chateau, now owned by Francis Ford Coppola in Rutherford. The secluded Daniel Cellar seats 16, and you can check it out at Inglenook.com, I-N-G-L-E, Inglenook.com. And then we have Robert Mondavi. In Oakville, Robert Mondavi's Toe Cologne Cellar Tasting Room accommodates 10 and showcases French oak barrels holding its reserve Cabernet Sauvignon. And more on that at RobertMondaviWinery.com. Mondavi is M-O-N-D-A-V-I, RobertMondaviWinery.com. Well, our foodie and beverage excursion continues. Whew, are you still hungry? With a week-long pastry hunt for the best little egg tart in Portugal. Writer and tartspert Deborah Bruno leads the way in her article from the November 16, 2018 issue of the Washington Post. Are you ready for this? Here we go. Portuguese egg tarts of pastéis de nata have been an obsession of mine since I first discovered them in Macau. When my husband and I lived in Beijing from 2011 to 2014, we were quickly severed from the American world of sweet desserts. Instead, we found ourselves living in the land of red bean filling. Bite into a dessert, see the dark center, and think, chocolate. Nope. Without fail, the filling was actually bean puree. Don't get me started on dry, flavorless mooncakes served during the mid-autumn festival. Then we visited Macau. The Portuguese colonized Macau in 1557, and although China now runs this region near Hong Kong on the southern edge of China, the place retains its Portuguese character. It was love at first taste for the pastel de nata, a custard tart and a puff pastry, small enough to hold in the palm of your hand, but satisfying enough to serve as a breakfast treat, afternoon snack, or dessert. Not too sweet, but sweet enough, pastéis de nata, the plural form, feature egg yolk custard filling with a lightly broiled top. When it's fresh, you take a bite and you have a moment. More recently, my husband and I decided to visit Portugal, home of pastéis de nata. I'm not saying we went to Portugal expressly to eat them, but I wouldn't deny it either. I also wouldn't deny that to make it more interesting, I'd announce that we were on a one-week quest to find the best. So here we go. She now begins with day one. Jet-lagged, grungy, and edgy after an overnight flight into Lisbon, we dumped our bags at our hotel and headed straight to the Tagus River waterfront. There, in the old-time market inside the refurbished Mercado de Ribeira, we found a branch of the Monte Garrido, considered by many to be the best source of pastéis de nata in Lisbon. The little shop certainly had nothing else to offer in its glass case, just row after row of doll-sized pies with a gently brown top. It could have been the loopy sleeplessness mixed with happiness to be off the plane. It could have been the warm breezes on a sunny Saturday morning, or it could have been the quality. But those inaugural egg tarts were so good. I took a bite, I closed my eyes, and the warm custard filled my mouth with hints of lemon and cinnamon. The flaky puff pastry crunched just enough. There it was again, a moment. We headed to Belém, about 6 miles west of downtown Lisbon. We skipped, for the moment, the famous Geronimos Monastery. The navigator Vasco da Gama rested inside, but he wasn't going anywhere. Instead, we headed straight to the café that claims it is the home of the egg tart, at Casa Pastéis de Belém. The products seem to be identical to Pastéis de Nata. The casual restaurant, which also serves sandwiches, coffee, and other pastries, turns out 20,000 egg tarts a day. Two long lines for takeout stretch down the block. But following a tip from our Uber driver, we slipped inside where a much shorter queue waited for a place at one of the cafe's 400 seats. Yes, the cafe is a tourist hotspot, but it's been a tourist hotspot since 1837, so it must be doing something right. Before very long, we were seated and ordering one, no make it two, no make it three, egg tarts, along with a strong cup of coffee from Café com Leite, coffee with milk. The menu described a sugarcane refinery and small store originally on the spot. When Portugal closed down its convents and monasteries after an early 19th century revolution, a worker from the monastery came up with the pastry as a means of survival following an ancient secret recipe from the monastery. The secret recipe, cooked up in a secret room inside the cafe, is still used today. Within minutes, we had our prize, three plump egg tarts. The crust was a degree crunchier, the custard filling was warmer and more souffle-like, so they were most likely whisked from the oven minutes before. On the table were shakers with cinnamon and confectioner sugar, which some diners added to their tarts. I sprinkled one with cinnamon, but to be honest, I think I preferred the plain version. They were good, but were they the best? I wasn't ready to declare a winner, and thus ends the memoir for day two, and now on to day three. We hopped on a train to Évora, about 85 miles from Lisbon, to the Alentejo region, which is known for its hearty cuisine. In this charming medieval city, we were presented with a new dilemma. Yes, there was pastel de nata, but there was also a new specialty, and that's Quijeros de Évora. We stopped at Café Arcada, a no-frills place right on Praça de Geraldo Square in the center of the city. We needed to try the Évora specialty. Purists would say we were comparing apples and oranges, or quijadas and pastéis. Purists would be right. In my defense, this was a tart exactly the size of pastéis de nata and the same golden color, but the quijada de Évora was filled with dense cheese custard, more like an Italian ricotta cheesecake than a souffle. It was really good. Very good, and so, but yet I wasn't ready to drop my pastel de nata allegiance. Well, we move on to day four. I faced a new dilemma. My husband Bob, the consummate sweet tooth, withdrew as a judge. In other words, he refused to eat another pastel de nata, let alone another tart. Even though these sweets are generally less sugary than the average pastry, he had reached his limit. There we were, in Sintra, about 20 miles west of Lisbon. I needed to think fast. Oh, look, I said to him, these pastries are a specialty of Sintra. Outside of Fabrica das Verdadeiras Quijadas de Sapa, I pointed to the sign that said the shop had been making quijadas since 1756. He took one for the team, although I don't think it really took much to convince him. We plopped our euros on the counter. These quijadas were made with a very thin, firm crust, and the filling was lighter and sweeter than the quijadas in the Bora. They were good, but not life-changing, although that judgment could have been clouded by our exhaustion from fighting Sintra's enormous crowds that day, coupled with unseasonable heat and, okay, I'll admit it, a certain tart fatigue. Day 5. In search of breakfast, we stumbled across a little cafe in the Lisbon neighborhood of Graça, selling something we ate often in China and loved, Jardim Guanbin. These treats are freshly cooked crepes with egg, spicy sauce, meats, and greens. There here was our chance to wax nostalgic about China and take a savory break from the pastel de nata immersion. Sitting next to us was a Chinese couple visiting Portugal with their daughter, who had just finished university in Scotland. They shared a truly global breakfast of Jardim Guanbin with a side of pastéis de nata. They offered us a pastry. We struck out with the Jardim Guanbin. Well, day 6. We visited the beach town of Cascais, about 20 miles from Lisbon. It was a brutally hot day, and we strolled along the town's pretty beach. Walking through town, we glanced across the street and saw a shop named The World Needs Nada. But does it? We were momentarily tempted, but trudged on. The tart fatigue was real. Day 7. As we prepared to leave Lisbon, we realized we had time for breakfast in the airport. Suddenly, the prospect of leaving Portugal made us regret those tart abstinent days. How fair was this competition? What kind of judges were we? Then, just before the security check, we turned a corner and saw redemption. Cafeteria Nacional por Baltazar Costanero, considered the oldest and most traditional confectionery of Lisbon. Since 1829, the sign said, this time Bob needed no lobbying. With a sense of relief, we bought our last couple of pastéis de nata. The tops were a little overbroad and the flaky crust a little too flaky. Even so, a mediocre pastel de nata is better than none. We bid a chao to Portugal with plans to return soon. Well, the winner? Well, the pastel de nata of day 1, made by Montenegria. Sticklers were argued that our research was capricious and inaccurate. They might be right, but now we're home from Lisbon. I regret every single day without pastry in Portugal. I'm going to try to make those little beauties myself. By the way, Bruno is based in the District of Washington, D.C., and she does write travel articles often, and we'll try to have more for you down the road. And if you're looking for a place to find pastel de nata, and then there's Montenegria, and you can check it out online at Montenegria Lisboa, L-I-S-B-O-A. Montenegria is M-A-N-T-E-I-G-A-R-I-A. MontenegriaLisboa.com. There are several branches around Lisbon, according to the writer. This one is fun because it's set inside the Mercado de la Ribera, a la Case de Sodra, with tables on the street just outside the market, perfect for people just watching. And each pastel de nata is from about $1 to $1.50. That and a cup of coffee has to be a great break. And that's the end of our journey on today's Armchair Traveler. Hope you've enjoyed and that you haven't left you too full. We will be back next week for the next adventure. I'm Mike Edwards, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and reminding you this is intended for people who are blind and print impaired, and the broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. Comments and questions can be directed to 919-832-5138. Bye-bye.